Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Adventures of a Mom Patriot. Thanks for tuning into the Adventures of a Mom Patriot talk show. Please remember to follow us on Blog Talk Radio so that you can stay informed about our upcoming guests and topics. To find us on Blog Talk Radio, it is www.blogtalkradio.com/Adventures of a Mom Patriot. And all of those words are separated by dashes, so that you'll be able to find us. And today's going to be a feisty show. I've been watching the news and reading online all kinds of articles about how politicians are basically just dividing Americans, and I'm kind of sick of it because they're dividing us on topics that we really shouldn't be divided on. So, and a lot of it would be solved with conversation. So today we'll be discussing how politicians have been dividing us all in order for them to retain their power over us. Keeping Americans distracted and divided has been happening for decades. And it's way past time to stop voting for politicians and for us to educate ourselves about those that wish to represent us as elected officials. This applies to all levels of government, from dog catcher to the President of the United States. The opinions in today's show is expressly the opinions of the host and the callers and are not to be ascribed as the viewpoints of any of the projects that may be mentioned. We are waiting for Lisa to call in, but I can start. The divisive topics of late that I have noticed, mainly, especially since I'm a mom and I volunteer for an organization called As a Mom, that is ASAMOM.org. I have a lot of contacts with moms of all different walks of life, and for years, politicians have been trying to split the women's vote because it's beneficial for us not to be on the same wavelength. And because women represent 51% of the voting population in our country, if they can find ways to divide us, they will. Instead of focusing on the Constitution or trying to solve the problems that the politicians have created with their overspending and their damage to our Constitution, they'd rather talk about topics such as, for example, moms working outside the home versus moms working in the home. I am a stay-at-home mom. I use those words loosely because we travel a lot around our local area to volunteer for things. I home educate my children. I've been a home educator for 18 years. And so a lot, and I'm also a small business owner. If you'd like to check out my website, I am an independent beauty consultant for Mary Kay. So if you would like to go there, it's marykay.com/KarinaDeanne. And I appreciate all orders that are placed because it helps me stay at home with my kids. So, Lisa, can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, I was just talking about, I was just focusing on moms working outside the home versus moms working in the home and how lately that was one of the major arguments amongst the politicians. And basically making the point that because the women's voting bloc is approximately 51% of the voting population, if they can find ways to divide us on certain issues, that just allows them to have more power, and then they can't focus on what we're really worried about.
So, which is our children's future.
Right. I mean, some of the issues, like, for example, the working mom versus the stay-at-home mom, a lot of it is language. They like to change the language around. And, for example, for a pundit to say that a stay-at-home mom doesn't have any experience just kind of fascinates me because, in my opinion, we're like the CEOs of our families.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, and downplaying that role of CEO.
Uh-oh, I think we might have just lost Lisa.
Us as family CEOs, but also to make us doubt ourselves when our choice was to sacrifice in other ways so that we can stay home with our children. So, and speaking from somebody who has raised children as an at-home mom, as a working mom, as a workaholic mom, as somebody who's worked in the house, out of the house, done it upside down, sideways, and 16 other different ways, robbing us of the joy that we have and the peace that we have when we can be at home with our kids, I think is a real tool in the progressive tool belt to undermining the family, because if we as moms feel guilty or we have trouble finding the joy in our role, it's very hard to stand firm and strong, especially as a conservative family, in what you believe in if you're made to feel bad about what you believe in.
Well, that goes right into the next topic, the single mom versus the married moms. I mean, you and I have both lived in all different situations, and making, like you said, making one segment of the women's population feel guilty for or feel even like the other side is making them less than what, you know, a real woman is, or whatever their description of it is. It's really frustrating because all moms should be cherished. Whatever situation they find them in, they're always focused on making their situation the best for their family. So none of it should be, in my opinion, used as a political tool.
Yeah, it's very easy to make the single mom a political tool, especially because a lot of single moms will qualify for public assistance. And therefore, you know, there's a dependency that's created there. Of course, what that allows for, too, is, you know, as much as there are single moms who need assistance, that's something that could be handled by other organizations, groups, and family members. I know several instances in my personal experience where family members were in a position to help out a single mom in the family but didn't because that mom was getting public assistance. And, of course, the frustration with that, not just for the taxpayer because they're subsidizing that, but for the single mom is they are being cultivated in an environment, you can't do it without being on the dole. You can't be an effective single mom without government help. It would be one thing for the family to give a leg up to a family member for a while or a place to stay or help them balance their budgets or whatever they're struggling with. But when the public actually starts helping, there's a self-esteem issue that creeps in, I can't make it without being on public assistance. And there are organizations and political entities that will use that.
Lisa, you're fading in and out. I know that you're in the middle of the country today.
Yes. I'm in a remote area today, so I do apologize. My signal is very weak. But, yeah, having lived this, you know, I've been a single mom.
Well, because I lost you again, I'm just going to make another statement because I want to move on to another topic. It's all about removing the power from us, just like you were saying. If moms or women aren't if they don't feel empowered in themselves and the choices that they make, they tend to be beaten down and not able to concentrate on some of the other issues. And it takes a lot to educate ourselves about the politicians that are, and the candidates that are running. And if the economic situation or whatever kind of situation that they have is clouding their thoughts, then it's harder to focus on that. Are
yes.
you back with me? Oh, good.
Yeah, I can. At the time, I think it's just hard to hear me because my signal is so bad. So.
Okay. Another thing that I've noticed that they're trying, and this is mostly probably more on a state level, is the educational choices. I mean, for example, one of the first times that I became heavily involved in what you would call politics was when a candidate that was running for president decided to make the statement that all parents should have four-year teaching degrees and be certified. Now, I know many, many parents in the home education community in my 18 years of experience that have had a high school diploma, and because they have two or three kids sitting around their table and their passion is to make sure those children are educated the best that they can, they reach out to others through co-ops and whatever. So for a candidate to make that statement and basically divide the public school system from the home education system and make it to where, you know, it's sort of like a battle. We can do better than you. And that's not how the home education, most of the home educators that I know, they don't do it because of that issue. There's other issues. We don't want our daughters being exposed to certain things that happen in public schools, and the teachers don't have control over all of that. My son did go to school for a few years, and he had the most amazing teachers, but they're being bullied and pressured by all kinds of different things, and then they have classrooms full of people and are full of kids, and some are on one level and another is on another level, and they're being burdened. So,
yes, absolutely. We saw an interesting movie this week. You've probably seen it, called The Cartel, and it talks about the New Jersey school system and how it's just a whole system that revolves around the opportunity for making money on the backs of these parents and these children, and at the sacrifice of their education. The premise being that anytime you have a huge employment system that's public, that employment system then can so easily be corrupted, because that's an opportunity for cronyism and crony employment. And that particular school system really suffers because they have something like six times the number of districts in that state than any other state of that relative size or population. So they are just overly inundated with administrative costs and costs to the school system and to the taxpayer that have nothing to do with providing the kids in the classroom and education. It is just a redundancy of administration after administration, sucking the lifeblood out of the education.
Well, and I even have experience. When my son first started school, I was one of those moms. I was there every day because I was a stay-at-home mom. And, I mean, my associate, I have an associate of science in early childhood education, so I loved being around the kids. But I saw even the politics in the school system. I mean, our teachers are on the front line, and they're being burdened by politicians even in the school system.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, and I'm moving on. I wanted to touch on the topic of, and this is a sticky topic. There's the topic of pro-life, pro-choice, or pro-adoption. And I know that you and I have had this conversation quite a few times. Can you hear that echoing back in your ear?
I'm blipping in and out a little bit. I'm actually walking the property looking for a good signal. So I'm doing my best.
Okay. So basically, you and I have had several conversations on this. And when the politicians or even the people are talking, they're only giving people two options, pro-life or pro-choice. And then you have the pro-life side, basically, not all of them, but a lot of them saying, well, if you're not pro-life, they equate pro-choice or pro-adoption with pro-death. And that truly bothers me to my soul because, like, for example, the conversations that we've had, I don't like labels to begin with, but if you're going to put a label on me, I would label myself as pro-adoption. And here's my point on that. Growing up, I know I was a teenager once, believe it or not, several years ago, and I had experience with girlfriends that made the mistake. Now, I was brought up in the church, and there was a girlfriend of mine that made a mistake. Her father was a deacon at the time, and she made the difficult choice of keeping her child. Now, that you would think would be totally exalted, and the ladies of the church or the church members would not make her feel so like she was an outcast. Well, she was made. She was made to feel like an outcast. Her dad had to step down as a deacon. So when I see that, and with the understanding that our daughters might make a mistake, I would like for there to be a movement that lets these children know, these babies that are having babies, know that if they make that mistake, that they're going to be loved and that they have options. They can keep the baby or they can put the baby up for adoption, because there are many, many families that are looking to have a child that can't have a child.
Right.
And I guess, you know, this might be putting myself out there, but I understand the passion of the pro-life movement. I really do, and there are some points to it that I agree upon. For example, I guess one of their points is if it was not legal, that there would be way less of it happening. But then I reflect on the horrors of what happened to women before it was legal, and do we really want our daughters to go back into that?
So, well, it's a morality issue. It's not a governmental issue. And, you know, I talked before about, you know, how I have a problem with legislating morality. I believe morality is something that is God-given, and we are created with the capacity to have ethics and morals and a heart check on these things. And, of course, the issue that I have with some of the stronger elements of each movement, whether it's pro-life or pro-abortion, is they are very reluctant to ever try to empathize with somebody with a different viewpoint. And the problem with that is, just like, you know, pro-life people who say, well, if you are not pro-life, that means you are pro-death. Well, my response would be, how dare you ascribe a morality to somebody with a completely different experience in life, worldview, personal history, passions and needs and experiences that indicate, a certain upbringing or behavior that they've come by honestly and naturally. It's been their life experience. How do you say, no, your life experience has been completely wrong? It's been their experience. So I think if somebody's being intellectually honest, they can honestly say, I don't particularly know how I feel about that, or I sense that I feel this way about it, but I'm open to discussing it with people of varying viewpoints because I may not have all the answers on that issue. So I appreciate when people are intellectually honest on that issue and acknowledge that there are questions that we don't have answers to as human beings. You know, the idea of when does life begin? Well, you can interpret scripture that life begins before, you know, the egg and the sperm come together. Life begins at the moment the egg and the sperm come together, and life begins at birth. You can interpret scripture at all three different aspects of when life begins. So who am I to say that somebody else's genuine scripture intelligently is wrong? So that presumes. The argument that seems to hold the most weight with me is people who have survived all experiences,
right.
Whether they've survived actually having an out-of-wedlock pregnancy, whether they've survived an abortion, whether they have been the baby who has survived the abortion, has been in some cases. Getting those people with those experiences together and letting them talk about it, the regrets that women who have had abortions have had, easily lead you to an understanding that this is not without consequence. Just because you can do it in secret and you can pay money to get it done doesn't mean it doesn't have ramifications down the line, either for your own personal health, your future, your emotional health, your family's emotional health. There's always a consequence. But at the same time, you know, there's a consequence of adoption too, and that can be a very positive consequence. We don't talk about that nearly enough in, you know, socially. We're trying to get people to come down on this life issue. Well, when do you think life begins? Well, how about let's ask a different question. What do you think the answer should be if somebody finds themselves in an unwanted pregnancy situation? I don't think you'll find anybody that says adoption is a bad idea. So I think that's
answer. That's a great point. It's about having conversations and asking the right questions. And and that's why I've just got to tell our listeners, when Lisa and I get on the phone and we can have a few hours, it's just not pretty. No, I'm just kidding. Lisa has always been one of my best friends that knows how to take a situation and ask the right questions. And that's you hit the nail on the head. We're talking about when life begins, when we should be talking, in my opinion, that what happens when the girl is in that situation, instead of demonizing people for wanting, you know, to clarify when life begins, how about we talk about how we can show these girls that, okay, you are in a situation that you don't, you know, didn't plan on. Let's go there. And but here's your options. You know, you have options, and that there are other conversations to be had. Now, on where the government does come into play, and is government funding, and we're gonna. Mm. I mean, we were talking about Planned Parenthood, and the discretion between what does Planned Parenthood actually provide. And, you know, what they actually started out being. I mean, I'm just wondering how many people actually have read anything about Margaret Sanger. I mean, she's kind of a scary individual.
Let's just say I'm glad she's no longer around to corrupt our young people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. She was a eugenicist, and a lot of people think she must have been, because Planned Parenthood is the I guess, evidence of her activism. She must have been somebody who was very pro-women and pro-family and positively powerful in society. And she was a highly destructive force of a known eugenicist at the time. And some of her public statements, you know, I'm not even aware of or have researched her deeply enough, because it's so creepy, to get into what went on behind the scenes in her personal history, but her public history is scary stuff, and it smacks of totalitarianism, thank you, and fascism, and everything that makes you hate Nazi Germany or think that was evil propagated against the world. She was all that and a bag of Cheetos. I mean, she was just a little nuts that way. So if you are a student of history and you already understand where you come down on the side of eugenicists as they were active under Hitler's regime, you would feel the same way about this woman. It was pretty nasty stuff. But the fact that Planned Parenthood is the kind of as strong an organization it is, you know, really would it would be easy to be deceived and think that she must have been some amazing civil rights feminist kind of strong woman. But no, she was down with people kind of person. So
well,
you definitely need to read up on her if you haven't already.
Exactly. Well, and for what happened to the Susan G. Komen Foundation, when they made that, you know, that decision, and then they reversed it, I was just, I believe our society, unfortunately, I mean, you can donate to whomever you want, you can go to whatever business you want, you can, you know, that is your way of making your views known. Mm-hmm. To bully a foundation that is for women's breast health into, you know, I was fascinated by that, and I'm wondering where the people are that are going to have to just take a stand and stay on that stand.
Well, and there are people already out there taking a stand. It's just they've been ignored because they've been perceived as extremists and alarmists because they've been saying Planned Parenthood is evil, Planned Parenthood is evil. And people are going, wow, they hand out condoms. How bad can they be? Seriously, they provide contraception. They provide health exams. And, of course, it's all smokescreen. They don't provide any of the breast cancer prevention services. They simply provide a referral, but yet they receive Susan G. Komen funds from breast cancer research. So money that could actually be going to research and prevention is going to an organization that doesn't even do anything to prevent. As a matter of fact, their number one industry is conducting abortions, and that has been linked to creating hormonal, a hormonally rich environment for breast cancer to flourish. So if somebody has a history of abortions, they are more likely to get breast cancer. How does that gel with the Susan G. Komen mission? Well, the VP at the time who realized that there was a conflict and got the board to agree to remove funding from Planned Parenthood, she's since been fired, or maybe perhaps she resigned. I'm not quite sure. She's no longer with the foundation, you know, she was the one who saw that it's a huge conflict of interest and they shouldn't be funding Planned Parenthood. But Planned Parenthood has been operating under cloak and dagger for quite a while, saying they perform functions they don't, saying they perform health services they don't. When you go in I used to work for a crisis pregnancy center, and I remember that we got an ultrasound machine years ago. And it was great because people who were on the fence about whether or not they wanted to have an abortion when they came to us and they really weren't sure, one of the most powerful tools we could give to them to help them make their decision, and nobody would have actively, the perception is if you've never worked with a crisis pregnancy center that has a mission that's pro-life, you may not know that in most of these crisis pregnancy centers, especially the one I worked in, nobody bullied anybody. Nobody forced anybody. We, you know, if they took their pregnancy test with us, they found out they were pregnant, and they walked out of the door and walked over to the Planned Parenthood clinic and signed up that day for an abortion, nobody would chase them down the street. Nobody would guilt them. Nobody would make them feel bad. It wasn't what we were there to do. We were there to educate and inform so that when they did make that decision, that very terribly difficult decision, they had as much information as possible because we knew Planned Parenthood wasn't giving it. Planned Parenthood did have ultrasound machines. They didn't use them.
Oh, wow.
We had ultrasound machines, and when we used them, we heard stories of women coming into us for pregnancy tests or for counseling. From the women who would come into us, they would say, you know, I actually, because I got my birth control at Planned Parenthood, I went there for my pregnancy test, and I heard that they had ultrasound machines, but they said that they weren't allowed to give ultrasounds to their pregnant, clients. And I thought, well, what in the world were they there for? And you know, so, okay, but it was not just one person coming and saying that, several people, it was a pattern. And what would happen is they would find out they were pregnant and they would ask for the ultrasound, and of course, no, we don't give that. You need to either go make an appointment with the doctor, and in that case, they did not give a referral, or you can schedule an abortion with us, and that was the service they were willing to provide. Well, they would come to us for just some more input. They felt like they weren't getting enough information. Maybe we had some more information. We had the ultrasound machine, and we would hook them up, and then we would show them. And of course, the idea was to lift off the veil and show these women who were pregnant, this is what your baby is really like right now. And if you make this decision, that is the decision you're making, whether you are 6 weeks pregnant or whether you are 6 months pregnant. You know, you can hear the heartbeat, you can see the development, there are recognizable features after 6 weeks. I mean, most of these women were not discovering they were pregnant until between 6 and 10 weeks. So there was something for them to look at to really have some information, and some of them still chose abortion. It was not like the panacea to automatically turn everybody pro-life. It was just an information tool so that when they did make the decision, they had all the information. They would find out later anyway. And what we did find out, because there was also a post-abortive counseling group that was run out of the Crisis Pregnancy Center, a lot of these women did not have the same panic disorder that military personnel have after, what is that called, PTSD? A lot of these women started showing those symptoms and became very, very depressed after they had their first child, because what would happen is they would have gone through the process of that first, the wanted child. They would get the ultrasound at the designated times, listen to the heartbeat, feel the kick, and it would dawn on them for the first time possibly in their, and since the time they'd had that abortion, what they had given up. And they had no idea that when they had their abortion at 14 weeks that the baby, can feel pain. They had no idea that at 8 weeks the baby's starting to kick. They had no idea about these things, and they felt very deceived. And it was, they dealt with huge amounts of depression after, or even during their pregnancy, realizing what they had given up. So eventually these women were going to figure out what had happened to them. But the ultrasound machines that sat unused in the Planned Parenthood centers just boggle my mind. There's just no explanation other than they're trying to deceive women into thinking that their fetus is a fetus and not a baby with a beating heart and kicking legs. So all that is to say that crisis pregnancy centers are not the mean, evil things that our media would have us think.
Don't most of them have adoptive services, too? They'll be able to connect. They're basically there for education, and they'll be able to help the women make the decision fully informed. And so I think, at least a couple of them that I know of, they have connections, or they can refer them to adoption counseling, right?
Well, in the counseling center we had in my town, it was, we were fairly full service, and it was common to have, you would have your pregnancy test service, you would have your counseling service, you would be able to get an ultrasound if you wanted one, you would get a doctor's referral if you wanted one, you would be able to go in, and many of them have food closets and clothes closets and maternity clothes and baby clothes, layettes, baby furniture. They took donations all the time, and there were always donations coming in for such things. But mainly, one of the biggest community services it did was create a network of matching future parents to crisis pregnancy moms, so that the birth mom had some place they know that they could plug in. First of all, some of these women were facing situations where they were being kicked out of the home for not choosing abortion.
Right.
We had a couple of young women come stay with us through the course of my working there as a counselor. We volunteered for this program where they could, if they needed a home because they got kicked out of their house for not having an abortion, they could have somebody to stay with. Or if they just felt uncomfortable there in a situation like maybe they had been living with a boyfriend and they got pregnant and the boyfriend says, I don't want that baby. And the woman says, well, I thought you loved me enough to sleep with me. You would love me enough to have a baby with me. And he said, nope. Or he finds out she's pregnant and runs. and leaves her. Well, she's left without a place to live. There was always an opportunity for them to find a place to live. There's always temporary housing and shelter available to these moms. And then, of course, if they chose adoption, there were eager families who have been waiting years. In our area, the norm to wait for an adopted child was 5 years. That was the average waiting list that these parents had been waiting to adopt a child. I just had a conversation recently with a friend of mine in Ohio who adopted, and their waiting list was 10 to 12 years. And I do hear that that's actually more common. So a lot of these families, you know, if they're getting what they feel is too old to have kids, they're actually going out of the country to adopt because their waiting list would be shorter, when they would have very happily taken anybody's child under any circumstances, health issues notwithstanding, parental circumstances notwithstanding, they to get plugged in locally, to have had a baby earlier, to have had several. I do know women who have only been able to adopt one or two, and they would have loved to have had four or five and been able to provide for them in a very loving, safe, nurturing environment. So, and as adoptee myself, I could tell you that growing up adopted is a very fine way to grow up, because you always feel like you were selected, like your parents chose you. You feel special in the best possible way. So, you know, I know a lot of birth parents worry about stigma. No, that's just not an issue anymore. It's not a practical concern. What is a practical concern is getting the pregnant mom the health care that she needs at that time, the nutrition she needs at that time. But crisis pregnancy centers are a portal to get that mom connected to get those services.
That's awesome. Well, we had a few other topics, but I want to, first of all, give our listeners some suggestions on how to take the power away from the pundits and the politicians and return it to we the people, where it's supposed to be. I want to encourage everyone to find a Lisa and have reasoned discussions with your friends and your families and your neighbors and even the people that are in line with you at the store. I mean, how many times I've walked through the grocery store and noticed that something that I was purchasing had just gone up exponentially. And just making a comment to the person standing next to you, it opens a door to strike up a conversation with them. Because, I mean, I really, most people that I've talked to can agree that the people that claim that there are representatives, they're not truly representing or serving the people. I mean, there was a report just this week that a lot of congressmen, they're leasing cars for like $1,800 or something, $900 to $1,800. They're getting leased vehicles. Now, how many of us out in America could afford a lease like that? They're up there living like kings. They don't come back to their district and, you know, probably don't even know what a gallon of milk costs these days. So what I want to do is encourage people to strike up a nonpartisan conversation with the person standing next to you. I'd like to encourage you to research the candidates that are running in your community. Please, please, please do not rely on the media or campaign ads. We must get away from the 60-second society. People think because of a campaign ad, it just boggles my mind. Attend a candidate forum. Ask the candidates questions. Find out where they're going to be. If you're looking, I want you to check your supervisor of elections websites. If you're outside of Florida, just Google elections and voting, and you'll be able to find candidates that are running for office that would represent you. Call them up. Give them a call. Send them an email. See what they're about. There's a couple of really good research organizations I want you to research. In Florida, we have Liberty Takeover 2012. That's www.libertytakeover2012.com. And what they're doing, it's nonpartisan. If you go to that website, they are surveying candidates that if you think you might want to run for office, go ahead and take their survey and submit it and see where you fall when it comes to liberty. I also want to encourage everyone to go to GOOOH.com. We've got some great candidates. Full disclosure, I'm the national Twitter campaign director for GO. I am also the Tampa Bay GO team leader. And we've got some amazing candidates in Florida and Texas and North Carolina. These candidates have been selected by the people, not the parties. But they are running in a two-party system to challenge the incumbents. Locally, we have a candidate that is challenging a 42-year incumbent. He's been in Congress for 42 years. And, that's pretty much he needs to retire. That's all I got to say.
That statement is shocking. People are talking about term limits. How about lifetime limits? Can we just have lifetime? If there's been enough time to transpire to get into the third generation of the family, you've been there too long. Wow.
I know that we're all busy. I know that the economy stinks, and some of us are having to work 2 and 3 jobs, or some of us are just overwhelmed by everything. But I want to encourage you to, once you find those candidates that have your views and values, that best represent you, get to know them and call them up and ask them what you can do for them. It doesn't necessarily mean money. You can make phone calls to your neighbors. You
yep.
can talk to your friends and family. It doesn't have to cost anything to help a good, true grassroots citizen candidate get on the ballot and get elected. And finally, I want to encourage you to connect with groups online. Lisa and her friend Teresa started an amazing organization. It's called Patriot Prayer Room, and I would love to turn it over so that Lisa can tell our listeners a lot more about it, because it's simply a fabulous group.
Thank you. I appreciate that. We actually have some very exciting things going on right now. We're in the process of redeveloping our website, and we're going to relaunch on July 4th. And it's the address is patriotprayerroom.org. And we have an active Facebook page that, of course, while our site is being revamped, we are going to be taking requests on our Facebook page, Patriot Prayer Room. excuse me. Well, what we saw, I guess maybe about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, as people started developing their relationships with patriots, we saw a common denominator.
Lisa, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I leaned to the side. a common denominator of patriots who were increasingly finding themselves compelled to pray for our country and its leaders and our patriot friends, and also people who we may regard in certain arenas as our enemies. But the Bible is very clear to pray for your enemies. So given that many of us were coming under spiritual conviction that we weren't praying enough, or that we weren't remembering to pray for everybody, even people that we philosophically or diametrically opposed to, we, under this conviction, we felt the Spirit of God move in a direction to unify that spirit of patriots who really just want to spend time in prayer together and pray for each other and lift our country up on a daily basis. And today is a very special day for us, because today is recognized as the National Day of Prayer. And National Day of Prayer is incredibly important, because we have a day where we can focus, and this has long been recognized. Many, many presidents, many generations have recognized today as the National Day of Prayer. It's not a new thing, and it's an opportunity for our country to focus and unify in prayer. And our mission was, the National Day of Prayer is such an amazing thing, but we would like to make that an everyday commitment, and a commitment that is not just praying for our country, but lifting each other up, because there are a lot of people out there who don't have anybody that potentially anybody praying for them. And that is a very powerful thing when you have somebody in your life that you know is praying for you. You feel encouraged. You feel like there is somebody you can go to and share your burdens with who is spiritually helping you address them through prayer. That is an encouragement. That is a blessing, and we wanted to facilitate that. And given, you know, what we were learning in the Patriot Movement, how you can operate a whole organization on a shoestring, we were learning some tools and techniques and free media components that we were able to put together and create the PatriotPrayerRoom.org. So it is an opportunity for people of all faiths, because as we say in our mission statement at the Patriot Prayer Room, it was created by Christians for people of all faiths. So when we talk about God, of course, we're referring to him as the biblical God. When we talk about prayer, we're praying in the way Jesus prayed, in the Lord's Prayer. That's the model for us for prayer. So although we as founders had a Christ-centered worldview, we also recognize there are people out there who may not have a Christ-centered worldview or even a Judeo-Christian worldview, but may appreciate being lifted up in prayer. And that the kind of natural compassion that flows from that, that is just a part of that process of remembering somebody in prayer, I think is also something that even if you don't subscribe to prayer or you don't think that this kind of thing is important, creating a culture where people feel comfortable and confident in lifting each other up, even in just in positive thoughts, is a good thing. So we certainly don't assume that everybody who needs lifting up is going to ascribe to our worldview as Christians. However, that is the way we know to pray. So that is the way we are going to pray. And that is how the Patriot Prayer Room got started. We saw the need. We talked to a few people, realized it was starting to permeate that sense that we need to start praying for each other in our country more. And we said, well, how about a place where people can actually list their prayer requests? They can send in a message or they can just list it right online and request prayer. And there have been situations where there's been, like just recently, there were a couple of our guys in the military who had been in a terrible situation in Afghanistan and gotten very hurt. And one of our members and good friends made sure that when she was sharing on Facebook about the situation, please pray for him, she also included our group page because she knew we had a network of prayer warriors. And so, of course, we prayed for him immediately right on the page. That's one thing about Patriot Prayer Room. You will actually see prayer typed out right in front of you. It's not anything that we do purely privately, simply because it's a community. And just like you would be possibly in your church or in a Bible study or in your home, and maybe you're sitting down with your kids at night and you're saying your prayers with your children and you're helping encourage them, that you love it to see them pray and you want to encourage them that you also pray, so you'll pray in front of them. We want to encourage our fellow patriots that we are not ashamed to pray in front of them. And that also lets them know that their requests are being lifted up immediately. And it's not like driving and praying. You know, we don't recommend when you drive and pray that you close your eyes. But most of us can actually type out the prayer and close our eyes, so we're good. So with no danger involved, you know, nobody is, you know, potentially going to get in a wreck over this. So we're safely sitting behind our keyboards. And that way you can also see how we're praying. And that way, if you'd like to, as you know, if you're being, if you're one of the people having your request known, and if you'd like to add something, you can add to that on your own, or you can certainly reply in the messaging and add to that too. We do corporate prayer as well, where we'll be on the phone and we will pray for each other right there on the phone, in a conference call situation as well. So it is not. It's not some ecumenically removed kind of process. This is a person-to-person, heart-to-heart, reaching out, trying to touch each other with words of encouragement and support process. So that's really our motivation for doing it. We saw the need, and we knew that God was compelling us to meet the need. We also knew that we were already trying to meet the need in our private lives, so why not share with each other what we're trying to do, and maybe they would be encouraged to join in. And then there's, you know, the Bible is very clear, where two or more are gathered in my name, I am in the midst of them. That is pretty powerful for God to tell you, when there's two or more of you, I am right there in the middle. I am right there. And it's not that God is not always there in the sense that he's always aware, watching what's going on, omnipotent, omnipresent. But the opportunity to feel his presence, I think, is the distinction there. Being right there in the midst of you, the opportunity to feel his spirit align with your spirit because you are sharing your prayer with somebody else who also is lifting that prayer up with you. It's extraordinary. It's incredibly powerful. And we just wanted to share that.
Well, and Teresa, she's just a precious person, and she's written quite a few devotionals. Are you going to have those available on your new website as well?
Yeah, so far, as of the previous site, we weren't able to really archive them anywhere. So the new site, we will have an archive as well as her daily devotional. She faithfully sends out a link from her Facebook page and the Patriot Prayer Room Facebook page, letting people know when new devotionals are coming out. She tries to do them every day. I actually tried to discourage her from that early on, just like, girl, come on, that's a huge commitment. Seriously, every day. And Karina, she does it faithfully almost every day. And, you know, sometimes I ask her to take a week off or something because she feels something like brewing spiritually, and she wants to spend that time quietly with God rather than producing the devotional. So you may see her take a couple days off, but that's because she's communing with God to make sure that her devotionals stay on target and they are always his words through her. And I can tell you right now, if she's listening to this, she's very, very frustrated. She is not a happy camper because we've said her name.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She just, you know, no. I have never had a problem with people. She, however, is very, you know, aware that her personality should be removed from the show because they are constantly to her and her heart and what she feels led to share. So she doesn't ever want to insert herself in the equation. You see how amazing she is? She's just amazing. And her humble spirit does allow God to speak to her in very powerful ways. There are times where, you know, she sends out the blast that she's, you know, done her devotional, and I go and look at it, and I haven't seen it. You know, it's not like she sends it to me for approval. You know, that's just not necessary. Well, that's just not necessary. She goes ahead and posts it, and I look at it and think, oh, I was just praying about that the other day, or, oh, my goodness, that is exactly what I needed to hear. Providentially, we just know this kind of devotional, how it's written with the heart that it's written, is really truly reaching beyond the temporal and reaching people in a way. And she's had some feedback, or we've gotten some feedback through the site about how powerfully affecting her devotionals have been. And what the new site is actually intended to do is not to project the Patriot Prayer Room into public life so much as it's intended to reinforce the reach of her devotionals and hopefully dramatically increase the opportunity that people will have to access them, because there are some great devotional resources out there, but some of them are very short, like a little blurb. Some of them are very long and very involved and powerfully deep. And both of those are fabulous, but sometimes you're in the mood for something right in the middle. That's a really, you know, think about, but is a simple one concept per day kind of process, so you're not overwhelmed in the process. So,
leans forward.
Yes, exactly. So she's terrific, and yes, we said her name. It's Teresa, and she is a blessing, and thank God every day for her. So, and she her faithfulness, you know.
So right now you're on Facebook, and if people want to search for it, it's Patriot Prayer Room, and you have you're just redesigning your site for now. So if anybody wants to know more about you, let's encourage them to go to Patriot Prayer Room on Facebook and like the Patriot
yes.
Prayer Room.
That would be nice, only because that blesses our hearts. But at the same time, I think it's more important when you see a devotional on there, you know, to friend the who are on the prayer room, because when the devotional gets sent out, you'll get the link, and then you can pass it around and maybe encourage somebody else's day. And we were just discussing earlier some of the opportunities we have through Facebook and Twitter. Well, these are communities that thrive on positive expressions and communications. And nobody wants somebody to get on Twitter and just but blast, or nobody wants somebody to get on Twitter and do nothing but beg, please come to my site, please buy my product. That is just not appropriate
right.
in those communities. Positive communication, positive exchange, helpful, educational resources, tools, links, these are the things that people want to see forwarded on Facebook and Twitter. And it's one of the things that you can offer if you're involved in the Facebook or Twitter community as a positive message that is crosses, you know, ecumenical lines, crosses political lines. It transcends a lot of the conversation that we get muddied down in day to day in the Patriot Movement, and at the same time, it may just bless somebody's day. So that's what we
hope.
That
sounds great. I know. I've read a few of her devotionals, and it's definitely they hit right at the right time.
Me too. That's a God thing, you know, it really is. And every once in a while, as a prayer room, we'll get together and we'll post a blog, or, you know, if there's something that comes up like HHS mandates that really hit us where we live, we in on certain events of the day. But our main focus is uplifting fellow patriots. Focus is the devotional, so that they can spend time in the Word, they can enrich their relationship with God, and when they share their prayer concerns with us, we know that they're being uplifted, not just in knowing they're being prayed for, but actually getting some actual milk and honey from the Word, if you will. So.
Well, and just real quickly, because we're actually running short on time. That 11 hour, it just goes by so quick. Real quickly, when people hear the word Patriot Prayer Room, what is your definition of a patriot?
Wow.
I just dropped that bomb on you.
We have how much time left? Anybody who loves his or her country.
There
whether
you go.
You're, you know, patriot in another country or you're a patriot in this country, it doesn't even matter what political persuasion you are. If you love this country and you want to see it survive and thrive, you are a patriot.
Excellent, excellent explanation. Okay, I want to wrap it up because we have 60 seconds. Thank you so much, Lisa. I know you probably had to walk a block away from where you were to find the signal.
A little bit, but that's all right. Happy to be here.
All right. So I want to encourage everybody to go to the Facebook Patriot Prayer Room. I also would like to encourage everyone to please check out go.com. That's G-O-O-O-H.com. We've got some true candidate citizen-selected statesmen. I want to say statesmen. They're not politicians. And,
Karina, I almost forgot. Our Twitter name is Patriot Prayer. So
okay. You
can follow us on Twitter, and then that way when the site launches, you will be the first to know if you follow us on Twitter at Patriot Prayer.
Awesome. That's great. Okay, well, take care and try to watch out for all the wild animals that you're walking around. And tell everybody up there that I said hi, and I appreciate all you're doing for our country. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.